Welcome to the Power of Interconnection. I'm your host, Julia Griffin, and I'm very happy to have Anya McAndrew today. She is a psychotherapist, ordained high priestess, and teacher, resides in a shamanic retreat community in the Smoky Mountains of Western North Carolina. For the past 13 years, Anya has facilitated several versions of the shamanic priestess process and shamanic Magdalene mysteries around the United States and in Costa Rica, integrating a lifetime of therapeutic work with women. Anya is also a master shamanic astrologer, shamanic breathwork, TM practitioner, and a Mago couples therapist. She has a private psychotherapy. Thank you. I appreciate it. She has a private psychotherapy practice in Atlanta for 14 years before moving to Western North Carolina. She's a bishop in the Madonna ministry and a shamanic global minister with Venus Rising. She's a contributor to the audio CD, Priestess Within, Your Direct Divine Connection. She speaks and is interviewed extensively for her work in women's empowerment. With 44 years of wisdom and experience in facilitating the personal journey and the couple's journey, co-leading grand adventures around the world, and working on her own inner and outer sacred marriage, she can be contacted through her website, goddessontheloose.com. So tell us a little bit about what you do in your work.
What I do in my work? Well, I am still doing priestess work, although I have stepped back quite a bit. You know, years ago, I've been doing the shamanic priestess process and the shamanic Magdalene mysteries for 20 years and just decided that was enough. So I stepped back from that work, actually led my last retreat here in Western North Carolina. And then it so happened that I was called to Malta to do some priestess initiation work there. So I'll be going to Malta next year over the summer solstice. And it may be a different kind. It's probably going to be a different kind of process. I'm not really sure what's coming through all the way, but it's definitely interesting. And my partner Daniel and I, my business partner, my friend and partner, Daniel DiMario, who's also my shamanic astrology teacher, and I take a group to the Celtic lands every year. And I'm leaving for Scotland, actually, on Sunday for 2 weeks. This year it's Scotland, last year it was Ireland, next year it'll be Wales and the Avebury area, which is also crop circle country. There's a huge, huge set of standing stone circles there that we believe people from all over the world came to celebrate Beltane. And then it's also a crop circle area. So those are two international kinds of things that I seem to be continually drawn to, is places that have sacred energy. And then I also have a private practice. I see some clients individually, see some clients on the phone, and then I also do what is my specialty, which is a personal and couples intensives. I just got back from being out of town working with a couple for 5 days in their home, and I do that, and also people come to me, and we just dive in. We work several hours a day. We dive into specific issues, and it's like a concentrated psychotherapy process. But I also love in that process, because I'm much more transpersonally oriented, I love doing shamanic astrology. I work with the Enneagram. I love doing things like past life regressions that are specific to the issues we're working on. And I also am a specialist in trauma work. So this can be early childhood trauma, but it can also be, you know, adult trauma as well. So that's kind of what I'm up to.
Yeah, that's
and,
a lot.
And kind of semi-retired at the same time, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. So. It was interesting to me when you were talking about the stones. I really got a tingle from that. Like those energy spaces really open up for you.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Really quite wonderful.
Yeah, there's. Well, you know, they were built by the Neolithic people, and we are learning so much about those people. The, you know, these cultures that that, you know, for instance, populated Ireland and Scotland way before the Celts came. This is pre-Celt, and these people were they were egalitarian. Okay, so masculine and feminine were equal. They were not involved in wars. They lived a peaceful existence, and we're finding this all over the world. That, you know, if we go back past patriarchy, past 6,000 years, we start finding cultures that were very peaceful,
mm-hmm.
and that had, in you know, equal relationships between men and women, and they were much more nature based. So these stone circles are amazing because each one of the stones has an energy, and each one of the circles has an energy, and you can just feel the stories in these stones. We always do an ancestor ceremony to honor not only our patriarchal ancestors, you know, regardless of what they did and the destruction and the war that they got into, but also the pre-patriarchal ancestors. And, you know,
right.
calling them back in for some wisdom.
Mm-hmm. There's so much power in the time that you're talking about. I can definitely feel that. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and we think of those people as nomads or that they somehow were hunters and gatherers. But, you know, we're finding evidence now that they created communities, they farmed. And certainly they did some hunting and gathering, but, you know, they're not as we have pictured them. So archaeology and is, you know, once we get out of the patriarchal mindset, because every single discipline that we know has been overly influenced by patriarchy. So there's a party line, you know, there are perspectives that will not see anything but what has been accepted in that field for, you know, however many long years.
Your blind spot.
So,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And there is a lot of power in this time that you're talking about. You know, when you said they didn't do much hunting or gathering, my first thought with that was, well, they didn't have to. They were really powerful. It's easy to get
yeah.
what they needed. Yeah.
Mhm.
So,
yeah, connected to nature.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. things come to you when you're connected. I love this quote from your website, "The power is in the lifting of the veil when something that has hurt us deeply is finally understood, and our hearts heal when the mm-hmm. holy and the beauty and the love within our mother's arms no longer out of reach."
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to
yeah.
us a bit about the Divine Mother?
The Divine Mother, yes. I mean, she's the earth, yeah? And she's evolving as we're evolving. What's happening on the surface right now is really difficult for a lot of us, but it's part of a shift. We're, you know, throwing off the old, and the old is kicking and screaming and has been for quite some time. But the Divine Mother has been here for us. You know, the Earth Mother certainly has been here for us for, you know, millennia, for millions of years. She's hosted the human family. And I love connecting with her at the center of the Earth, the center of in that dimension, which is called the first dimension. There is a, according to Barbara Hanclough and the science that she references, there is a mile-wide iron core crystal at the center of the earth, and that is the heart of the mother, which is resonant with our base chakra. And we actually have a base chakra that is connected to the earth. So, you know, when we leave the earth, we don't have that anymore. But while we're here, we're definitely connected to the mother, sort of an umbilical cord, yeah?
Yeah.
And that is my first connection to Divine Mother. And then of course there are higher dimensional versions of Divine Mother all the way through the dimensions, and we're just now starting to understand or to even know about the many dimensions that humans can be cognizant of. And, you know, the fourth dimension, for instance, which is where many teachers feel that we're moving into, that the earth is already there, we're moving into the fourth dimension, and we'll eventually get to the fifth dimension, is really, I believe, where the gods and goddesses live, the ones that we think of when we think of the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And they're archetypes, you know, they're the archetypes mm-hmm. that inform us in different ways. And then there are, I think, higher versions of the divine feminine and the divine masculine in higher dimensions. For instance, the eighth dimension. Yeah, the eighth dimension would be the God realm, so to speak. And mm-hmm. you could think about a conference table of representatives from not only all the dimensions, but maybe all the worlds sitting at that conference table and planning and making plans. And of course, that would be a place where the masculine and the feminine would be represented. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know what else to say.
No, I think you said
it well.
If there's any
other question you have in that direction. Okay.
You teach people to find their inner priest and priestess. Can you tell us about the process of finding this part of the self? I think for some of us, you know, we've had that role for many lifetimes. For other people, they discover it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I think the main way to discover or to activate the inner priest or the inner priestess is ceremony. And I like to use the word ceremony rather than ritual, because I think ritual sometimes has been dark. But ceremony is, especially living ceremony, which is what I teach and what I was taught, is ceremony that you can just pull together anywhere with anything. You don't need to even bring anything with you. If you're in nature or you're somewhere where ceremony needs to happen, you just pull together what is called for. You want to set an intention for the ceremony. You want to have symbols for that intention. You want to have the elements represented, earth, air, fire, water, spirit. And those can be objects from nature or whatever you have. You want to, you know, uplift the energies with perhaps movement or sound or song. Or music of some kind, instruments, and, you know, and be in a celebration mode once you've lifted up whatever it is you're lifting up and spoken into. So, you know, your words are really important. Another thing that's really important along with the elements is calling in the directions, locating yourself in space and time. But it's easier than people think. People tend to think that ceremony is something, you know, mystical or mysterious in some way, but it doesn't have to be. It can simply be a circle of people speaking their prayers and lifting them up.
No, I can remember.
And aligning
with the
dimensions.
Yeah, as a child, I would gather flowers and marbles and all kinds of things to put underneath trees and make a wish. But one thing you said that I think is important, and I'm often asked about this when I teach classes, why are the directions and the elements important? So I'd love to hear someone else's words about that.
The directions and the elements are important, and I connect those. And because I'm an astrologer, I use the wheel, the astrological wheel. So in the east is fire, and it's, you know, when you think of fire and you think of the east, think of the rising sun and new beginnings. When you think of the south, when I think of the south, I think of Cancer, the sign of Cancer, which is water, the element of water. and I think of the oceans and the emotional body. Okay, so fire tends to be logos or inspiration. So these are qualities that are aligned with the directions, which are aligned with the elements. And there are spirit keepers in each of those directions. You could think of the spirit keepers as the Apus or the mountains, or just the energies, the spiritual energies in each one of these directions that have been here forever. And then in the West, I connect that with air or Libra, which is overview and really seeing the big picture of things. It's the mind, but it's the mind that goes beyond the rational mind. It's a big picture mind. And then the North is Earth, and it's the ancestors, and it's also the four-leggeds. And of course, there's animals that you can connect with all of those too if you're into animals. And then the center of course is the as above, so below, going from the, for me, goes deep into the earth, into that center first dimension, all the way to the great central sun or Hunabku or the black hole, in the center of our galaxy, that is the ninth dimension. And the as above and so within as well, which is the inner self and the manifestations of that on the outer self. You know, if you see a fox on your walk, you have fox medicine that day. If you see a snake, you have snake medicine that day. It's they inform us, you know, and there's also a way of looking at the as within, so without, as, you know, whatever is happening outside of us is a reflection of what's happening inside, and vice versa. It's not one creating the other or the other creating the one. It's a reflection of. And so I think the main reason for calling in the elements or aligning with the elements and aligning with the directions, aligning with the animals in each place, maybe even in my priestess work, it's aligning with the goddesses, the fire goddesses, the water goddesses, the air and the earth goddesses, is to locate us in space and time, to give us a sense that we are connected. You know, your summit is called interconnection. So, you know, I do a morning ritual, which is one of my ways of starting the day that has to do with calling in the directions and the elements and stating my intention and moving some energy, maybe just doing some shaking, you know, or some vibrating for a couple of minutes. But I think that's the reason for me.
There's definitely balance and power with that, the elements, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely aware of us when we call them in or when we think about them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you about archetypes. Mm-hmm. I think you write a lot about that and you talk about that. What is your perception of archetypes?
I see archetypes as mediating energies between spirit and human. So, for instance, an easy one would be the mother or father archetype. Okay, mm-hmm. there are developmental levels to each of these. So we could look at the warrior archetype, for instance. In astrology, that would be Aries. And there are different developmental levels of the warrior, right? There's the warrior that's the obedient soldier. There's the warrior that just loves to fight and, you know, is good in battle, good in fights, and very skilled. And then there's the spiritual warrior, or the spiritual activist, which is a higher level. But what each of them have in common is the ability to stand for something. And to do what is necessary to you could say, a protector or an advocate. The same thing would be true with the mother, father, or what I see as cancer, is the nurturer. And so, you know, there are various levels of that. At the lowest level, it might be the codependent or the possessive, engulfing, you know, a mother or even father who, you know, chooses his family over everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. Who excludes right. everyone that is not part of the clan. And then, mm-hmm. you know, there's the nurture that really does nurture the children, maybe doesn't specifically, or the four-leggeds, that doesn't specifically have favorites. But at the highest level, that Cancer nurture archetype would be one who husbands the earth, who works with the earth, who's very connected to nature. I've seen women, for instance, who have a Cancer rising. They don't have children. They've not really wanted to have children. But, you know, maybe this woman is a forest person who works for the forest.
Right.
Or a man who is developing some kind of new food from mm-hmm. plants.
Go ahead.
Those are different archetypes. And I love the developmental concept. Go ahead.
Oh, I do too. What I was going to say is these are almost like formats that we can click into and enjoy them or live through them on different levels. Would that be a good way of saying it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Yes. And we can track ourselves too. You know, we can see, okay, what am I doing with this particular, and that's one of the reasons I love astrology. I also love the Enneagram. So I would really recommend that anyone who has not really done an Enneagram workup for themselves, there are 9 archetypes in the Enneagram, and they're very helpful and maybe a little bit more easier to learn and simpler than astrology. But this is something I do in my work as well, because I think that it's really helpful for people to see, you know, where they fit in, where they're, you know, I see the personality as the vehicle or the flower of the soul. So, you know, if we can express, we don't want to wipe out our personalities in any sense whatsoever. They're flavors. They're flowers. And we mm-hmm. have, you know, millions of different flavors and flowers. But there are ways that we can work with particular types, our particular type, and
right.
and really bring it to sort of an at our best or enlightened expression. So it's kind of the same thing, developmental level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We are this personality this lifetime, but how beautiful can we make that personality for this lifetime? Mm.
Exactly. You know, we each have a lot to give and a lot to share in the world.
From what you've said, I already know that you do this, but tell our listeners how you can use particular times of the moon or the year for deeper connections.
Mm. Well, you know, there's 8 phases of the moon, and these 8 phases have different signatures. You could say that the 8 phases of the moon are archetypal as well. But just to speak about the 2 most popular phases, the new moon is a time for planting seeds. It's a time for setting intentions. One of the things I do in my astrological work is I give people a year's worth of what are called their power days or their sun, moon, angle days. In other words, each one of us was born at a certain moon phase. So, and each moon phase lasts 3 to 4 days. If you can track exactly when, if you know exactly what phase you were born in, say you were born in the full moon, or you were born in a gibbous moon, which is right before full, or disseminating moon, which is right after full, you get a little more information about your particular signature, and that exact timing between the sun and the moon, that exact angle, because it's the angle between the sun and moon that makes the moon phase. If you know when that is, and it repeats itself every month, that is the most powerful time of the month for you. And I created I might have actually posted that as a new moon ceremony last time, and I may just give that to you again, send that to you again so that people can have that. And of course, people can sign up for my website or not. But it is useful. It's just a power time because the new moon is the time when you want to do that, or your power days. Your power days would be the exact timing, the day before or the day after. But you couldn't get your power days unless you worked with a shamanic astrologer. Because I think, as far as I know, we're the few people who do that. But those timings, I mean, for ancient women, those timings are astrological birth control. So if you knew you knew the phase you were born in, the moon phase that you were born in, you are fertile during that time period. So for younger women, I always tell them, be extra careful. If you want to conceive, or if you don't want to conceive, pay attention to your power days. Because even if you're not ovulating, you actually could get pregnant during that timing. And a lot of women have told me, oh, now I know. Now I understand. So it's, you know, fascinating how ancient women, you know, our cycles are all kind of crazy and off now, I think, for most women. I don't know of any women who actually ovulate with their power days. I'm sure there are if they tracked. If I had access to enough women who were doing that kind of research, I would find some.
This is just one example of, and this is just the moon cycle. There are many other cycles. Mm-hmm. How there is so much natural, powerful earth energy that we can make use of if we just move into it just a little, or just start to study it a small amount. Then those forces move with us.
Exactly. We are in alignment with those energies. And, you know, the cross-quarter days, the solstices, since a lot of people don't pay attention to the cross-quarter days, we just had Lammas, which is early August, which is also called St. Bridget's Day. And, you know, there's an astrological version. There's also sort of a cultural version. And, you know, but you can pay attention to the solstices and equinoxes. Those solstices and equinoxes happen, you know, four times a year. You can also pay attention to the eclipse seasons, which are, twice a year. Lunar eclipses, solar eclipses, which are 2 weeks apart, and they're twice a year, every 6 months. And those are very powerful timings too. So if you're conceiving something or letting go of something in an eclipse season, 2 weeks twice a year, that's a powerful timing too, to track. It's like a super new moon. An eclipse is like a super new moon. And so that is a good time to set intention. And then, of course, the solstices and equinoxes are also very powerful, sort of cracks between the worlds, you could say. So if you set an intention during the solstice or equinox, you're bringing, you're honoring those energies, and they're paying attention. All they need for us is to do to ask, just to ask.
Right. That's very helpful. I know you live in a beautiful wild place in North Carolina. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of nature in awakening? I know you know so much about it, but maybe just a few tips.
Yeah, I just can't imagine not being in a natural beauty every day. You know, I like to, I have a mountain view when I step out my patio, my back patio, I have a mountain view, which is wonderful. And I think for me, you know, watching the seasons change, watching the weather is powerful for me, watching the seasons change, feeding the birds, calling in a number of different species of birds. Birds are resonant with the seventh dimension, which is a dimension of sound and light. And so we're told that bird song can actually uplift us. So it's interesting to let bird song in. I like to let bird song in the morning, in my morning ritual, And, you know, as I'm calling in my hearing, you know, I also call in my senses. So calling in sight, calling in sound, calling in touch, calling in smell, taste. So allowing birds to activate your seventh dimensional self, your higher self, and just receiving that. Sometimes if you just listen to birds, they're amazing. You know, they're just really amazing.
They talk to us all.
Yeah.
You know, they talk to us all day long and tell us things if only we pay attention.
Yes. And having good water. Water is a part of nature. And having really good water is so important to us. Most of us are, you know, dehydrated. And and walking, being by water as often as you can. We have a creek here that I walk along every day with my dog. And that's really important, too. And just, you know, putting your feet on the earth. I have a pet sitter staying with me. And she said, I'm walking the path, you know, I'm walking the trail. We have a trail that goes through our community. She says, I'm walking the trail barefoot every day. You know, like, I don't do it barefoot, but, you know, I admire her for doing that. And, you know, she's getting some extra earth energy by doing that. But just standing on the earth, if you have any space where you can stand on the earth barefoot, that's really great. That's really great for connecting. You know, we think of connecting with spirit as going up and out. But the feminine path and the path of this time is to bring the spiritual realms to earth. That's what we're really here to do, and to bring them into our bodies. So it's not about leaving our bodies. Those teachings are not effective. They're not, they're even getting to the point where they're not popular anymore. Thank God. So that we can, you know, we can bring the spiritual energies in and embody them. That's what we really want to do.
I agree. And you do feel so much stronger and so much more vibrant if you spend time outside.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I would add, though, is, in the early 20th century writings all focus on the upper chakras. And a lot of people who do spiritual work, it's just their upper chakras. They don't have anything going on in the bottom chakra, and that's equally important.
Yeah. Absolutely. Those are the feminine chakras. And in my Magdalene work, I talk about I'm doing my last Magdalene circle coming up in the spring, and the way I have been doing it, at least. And we talk about, you know, the lower chakras. And for women, that's money, sex, and power. And, and connecting those all to the heart, but also to the upper chakras and to spirit. So it's the spiritual, you know, what is spiritual activism, for instance, which would be power chakra, and what is sacred sexuality, and what is, you know, our connection, like we're talking about, our connection to the earth and our connection to money, which, you know, Moneta, which is a goddess, ancient Roman goddess, oversaw the mints, the first mints that minted coins, and money. So money is overseen by a goddess originally.
Right.
And we've lost that. We've really lost that connection between money and the sacred.
Feminine.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So those are things that people can think about. If you were going to give advice, what's one small thing that our listeners could do to increase their consciousness and move into awakening?
I think the one thing I would say is to have some kind of a morning ritual. It can be, if you have to rush out the door in the morning, it could be having a deck that you're, a card deck you're working with, lighting a candle and pulling a card for your day, and contemplating that for the day. That would be the fastest thing you could do. And, you know, overall, make an altar. Make an altar so that you've got some place to go and put your prayers and say your prayers and talk to, you know, your higher self, talk to your divinity. I mean, I had so many suggestions. I would be, we could be doing this for a while because I, you know, I'm constantly making suggestions for my clients along these lines.
Yeah, you're basically saying make a spiritual connection before you go out into the world or you do other things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Connect to yourself. Call in, you know, every time you pull a card or you light a candle or you go to your altar, call in your higher self. And, you know, if you're going to call in guides and teachers, call in the highest of your guides and teachers, because there's a lot of subterfuge going on right now. So you don't want to be calling in disembodied spirits or, you know, some other energies. You're safest by calling in your higher self, which is connected to your soul, which is connected to your spirit. And you are vast. You know, we think about, oh, well, just my higher self. Well, no, you're vast. You are multidimensional. You have many, 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 many different aspects to you. So calling in your higher self. And I always try to connect. If I'm asking a question or using a pendulum or something, just also try to connect with my soul seed, which is where my soul entered my body at my solar plexus, and also my body elemental. Folks could just look that up, body elemental. The body elemental is you could think of it as a deva or an energetic, spiritual energy that oversees our body. And body elemental.
You're united in that, yeah.
Yeah, you're honoring your body elemental, which takes care of your body, and you're connecting and aligning with all of those. So it's kind of a vertical, for me, it's a vertical alignment all the way up to the highest dimension, in ninth dimension, which is what humans are capable of understanding, all the way through the dimensions to my higher self, to my, I even bring in my high heart, but you know, at the very least, your higher self and your soul seed and your body elemental, and then go all the way down to the center of the earth. And you got this amazing alignment. And then you call in directions and elements and whoa.
And there it is, just as we're talking right now. We both have that going on now.
Yeah.
So tell our listeners how to find you, and I guess just tell us about a few of your upcoming activities, because I think you're very busy.
I am pretty busy. I'm leaving for Scotland on Sunday for 2 weeks. The fall is fairly laid back. I'm just doing some personal intensives. I always find space for personal intensives. 3 days to 5 days is usually the average that I work with people in my home. They come to the mountains, it becomes a mountain retreat for them. And then in the spring, I'm doing a Magdalene circle, but that's really only for emerged priestesses that have emerged from my lineage, of Nicole Christine. It's an advanced process. And then in the summer, I'm taking a group of 12 women to Malta to do some work at the temples, some personal work of releasing. And it's really a releasing, more releasing of the patriarchy within us, the old programs, and a reclaiming. And that'll be happening over the summer solstice. And then I'll also be going back to Avebury and Craft Circles and Wales, which is, all those places are just full of amazing temples and amazing earth temples and sites. I am available for personal intensives. I'm also available for online work and shamanic astrology work. And then my events are usually posted on my website. But I don't have the Malta. I don't have the Malta event posted.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing so much information with us and so much depth. I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I'll just say my website one more time, which is easy to remember, goddessontheloose.com. And you can find everything about me there, including my phone number. Thanks, Julia. It's great to speak with you again. Good luck with the summit.